namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. So again today we will recite some more pastimes of Lord Ram, and I thought we could begin with a focus, of course, on Lord Ram, but I wanted to try to draw a couple of parallels between Lord Ram and Lord Chaitanya. Of course, they are the same person, basically. Although Lord Ram has his own particular character and nature, which is different in many ways from Krishna and from Lord Chaitanya also. But naturally, there are parallels, seeing they are the same person. There must be some parallels. So, let us just talk a little bit about that to start off with, and then we'll go on to some other things. So, first of all, I am going to read a verse. It is a verse from Ramayana, Yudhakanda, Chapter 18, verse 33, and it is spoken by Lord Ramachandra. However, in our own literatures, this verse appears in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 22, which is titled The Process of Devotional Service, and it is verse 34, quoted, of course, from the Ramayana. Sakrid eva prapano yas, tavasmiti cha yachate, abhayam sarvada tasmai, dadamye tad vratam mama. Note the last line. It's, I think, quite easy to understand. Dadam yetad vratam mama. This is, I give this vow. So it is Lord Ram speaking. Here is the translation. It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. So this is Lord Ram speaking to, not exactly to, but about Vibhisa, one of the brothers of Ravana, who came to join Lord Ram just before the battle began. He abandoned his brother Ravana and flew across to the India side there, where Lord Ram at that point was there with his army gathered. So Vibhisan came flying in from Lanka. And there was Lord Ram with all the monkeys and bears and his army. And they saw, here is this aircraft, some sort of aircraft, coming in from Lanka. And as far as they were concerned, anything coming from Lanka must be bad. So they were all ready, let us deal with whatever, whoever is flying in from Lanka. And then they saw it is not just anyone, it is Vibhishan, one of the brothers of Ravan. Actually, that Vibhishan was a devotee. He was a devotee, but they were not aware. I mean, Lord Ram's army, they were not aware at that time. They just thought, well, he's a brother of Ravan, and so he's one of the enemy. So they geared up to just get him as soon as he landed. And if I remember correctly, it was Angada. You could correct me if I'm wrong, but it was one of the main monkeys that. shall we say it's Angada? Seeing that it's Vibhishan, turned to Lord Ram and said, look, my lord, it's one of the enemy. It's one of the great demons, brother of Ravan, it's Vibhishan. Let us just kill him immediately. And Lord Ram said, no, it's all right. Let us just wait and see what he wants. So Angada was not happy about that, but he agreed, all right. But he was still feeling a great urge to kill Vibhishan. And then Vibhishan landed, and again Angada said to Lord Ram, let's just kill him. You never know what he's going to do. But Lord Ram again said, no, it's all right. Just relax. Let us wait and see what he wants. And then Vibhishan got out of his aircraft and offered prostrated obeisances on the ground to Lord Ram and said, my dear lord, from this day on, I am yours. That line is mentioned here, at least in the verse that we read, spoken by Lord Ram. So Angada, hearing that, said, no, no, my lord, don't believe him. Don't listen to him. He's a rascal. He's a demon. Let us just kill him. Then we don't need to worry about whether it's true or not, or whether he's just trying to trick us, or whether he's genuine. And they say that he coined what later became a famous saying, the only good demon is a dead demon. The only good demon is a dead demon. And Lord Ram, they're still protesting to Lord Ram, don't believe him. Just let us kill him. And Lord Ram became somewhat angry and took a stronger stand and said that if even Ravana himself came and did like this and said like this, I would immediately accept him. And then he spoke this verse. It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. So it's a very authoritative statement. This is appearing in Chaitanya Charitamrita it is spoken, actually, it is spoken by Lord Chaitanya himself to Sanatan Goswami. So it's very authoritative, but it also reveals a parallel. As we mentioned, we're looking for some, trying to point out some parallels between Lord Ram and Lord Chaitanya. So here is a parallel, a very important parallel, that Lord Ram is extremely merciful. He's extremely kind, even, what would you say, even taking some risk, arguably, some risk that this brother of Ravana, all the other family members were just first-class demons. And now here's this one, and as far as they know, he is no better than the others, as far as Lord Ram's army knows. But Lord Ram, he's ready to give him the benefit of the doubt, and a big benefit, a very big benefit of the doubt, that to just accept him. In this way, we get a glimpse into the heart of Lord Ram. You know, when we associate with anybody, really, devotees, when there's some connection with the Lord himself, then inevitably the devotees, any particular incarnation of the Lord, as they are conducting themselves, performing their pastimes, doing their service, whatever they're doing, if one is a little perceptive, then one will get little glimpses into their hearts, who that person really is at heart. How do they really feel on a deeper level? And this is very nice. It's really very, very nice when you see, when some particularly sweet and a beautiful aspect of the nature of a person is in a natural way revealed in the course of their activities and exchanges, then it's very heartwarming, actually. So this is very heartwarming, that Lord Ram, just as Lord Chaitanya, he delivered Jagai and Madai, and all sorts of people of that, of those types, the Jagais and Madais who were around in those days. He is known as Mahavadanyaya Avatar, the most merciful, munificent, generous, most generous form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he was giving love of God to anyone and everyone, and even sometimes to animals. There are stories like that. Lord Chaitanya delivering the puppy dog, Lord Chaitanya delivering a crocodile. Yes, so this we see then in Lord Chaitanya. It's a very prominent feature of his character and his activities. In Lord Ram, it's not as prominent. He's not just going around giving mercy just like that to all sorts of improbable people, but sometimes he does. And as he said there in that case, if even Ravana himself came and offered obeisances and said, my Lord. From this day on, I am yours. Lord Ram said, I would immediately accept him. So that's nice. There are other times when that aspect of his nature showed itself, like the evening of the second to last day of the battle. There was no one left on Ravana's side except Ravana. And Lord Ram told Ravana that just give me Sita back, that's all. Just give me Sita back and we'll stop all of this fighting and killing. We'll stop it all immediately. And Lord Ram said that I will bring all your warriors back to life, all your family members. I'll bring them all back to life. And I will make them forget that you and I were ever enemies. I'll make them think that we've always been friends and we'll be friends. And you just carry on ruling Lanka, you just carry on and we will be friends. Just give Sita back, that's all. And in Bhagavad Gita, those of you who were studying with us last year, in Bhagavad Gita, we read that a person who's in tamagun, the mode of ignorance, is prone in any situation where there's a decision to be made, some choice to be made, either this or that, what shall we do? Then a person in tamagun, in the mode of ignorance, is spontaneously attracted to making the wrong choice. Just automatically attracted to the wrong choice. And Ravana, being a very strong candidate in the mode of ignorance, he did just that. Lord Ram made that offer, and Ravana just said no. He wouldn't give Sita back. And, you know, pardon me putting it this way, but Ravana had no shortage of women at his disposal. He had no shortage. He had so many who he had abducted and kidnapped generally from their husbands. Yeah. So no shortage. And Sita's only one. But his choice was, no, I won't give her back. And the next day, of course, he paid with his life. But again, the same point in regards to the character of Lord Ram, that he was very merciful and open, that despite everything, he would just let Ravan off just like that and become his friend. And they would just cooperate together and work together. So this is also like, it's the same sort of idea. It's like the mood of Lord Chaitanya. Very merciful. At any cost, at any risk, being very kind to people who really don't deserve kindness at all. So like this, it's interesting. It's interesting. There are so many differences. Lord Ram is kind of inflexible in many ways. Lord Chaitanya was extremely flexible in many ways. So But still, there are parallels, and it's nice to see them and recognize them, and recognize the oneness of character which is there behind the scenes, deeper, a little deeper within the heart. Another parallel I wanted to mention, it's a parallel, you could say. It's in regards to the chanting of the holy names. There's a story, which I've told many times before, I'm sure some of you have heard it many times. The background is that when Lord Ram and Sita and Lakshman when they just first went into exile, very early on in the first days, then they stayed in the village or ashram of the king of the hunters, who was a devotee, although he was a hunter, but he was a devotee. Nishadha Raj, king of the hunters, and Lord Ram, Sita, Lakshman, they stayed for some days there. And because the Nishadha Raj was a very dedicated devotee of Lord Ram, despite being a hunter, so they became very close, very, very close. And the Nishadha Raj, he just loved Lord Ram. But then Lord Ram, the party, they moved on, and they didn't see each other again for years. That was just some days or a week or two, something like that, into the exile. They didn't meet again for 14 years, till when the exile had finished. And Lord Ram had already returned to Ayodhya. So, the Nishadha Raj heard that Lord Ram, his exile is finished, he's back in Ayodhya, he's going to be crowned the king. And the Nishadha Raj thought, I must go there and witness him being enthroned. I just have to go there. So he jumped on his chariot, and he just flew into Ayodhya at top speed, and just flying through the streets and practically knocking people over. And as he was going, approaching the palace, he came to one of the main squares where Vasishtha, or Vishvamitra, or Vasishtha, I think, must have been Vasishtha, was setting up the arena for the yajnas that were part of the coronation program. So he's setting everything up and marking out the boundaries and the borders and placing different things in different positions. And who should come flying through but the Nishadha Raj? And his one wheel crossed over the corner of one of these very carefully demarcated yajna shalas, areas of sacrifice, which had been established with mantras and yantras and tantras, you know, really officially established. And here comes the Nishadha Raj, and his one wheel crosses over the corner of it, and it's contaminated. And Vasishtha became irate that we have established this, and it took so much to do, and now we've got to do it again, and this is too much. went to Lord Ram and complained. Whoever this rascal was who came flying through on his chariot, he has to die. You have to kill him. You're the king, or you're going to be the king. This is for you to do. And Lord Ram, always duty bound, yes, let us go. So he got on a chariot and went. And they're now looking for this person, the Nishadaraj. And the Nishadaraj, he heard that this is what has happened, and this is what is going to happen. I'm going to be punished by death. And he became extremely upset. My dear, dear friend Ram is going to kill me. Oh no, what a terrible disaster. And he asked people, what do you think I should do? Is there anything I can do? And someone told him, go to Hanuman. Go to Hanuman. If anyone can help you, it'll be Hanuman. So he went to Hanuman and explained the situation and said, well, can you help? Is there anything that can be done? And Hanuman said, I don't know. I really don't know. And just at that moment, who should appear on his chariot in full battle dress, fully armed, and with Vasishtha, but Lord Ram? And Vasishtha pointed out, that's him, there, kill him. And Hanuman, seeing this, he didn't know what to do, so he just sat down and just started chanting, Ram, 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 Ram. And the Nishadaraj, he was just crying and crying, my Lord, no, no. And Lord Ram took an arrow from the quiver, placed it on his bow, aimed it at the Nishadaraj, and released it. And the arrow was flying. And Hanuman was chanting. And the Nishadaraj was crying. And the arrow was flying, but then it disappeared in midair. Oh, what was that? So Vasishtha, Lord Ram, they're taken aback. Vasishtha said, no problem. Take another arrow. So Lord Ram took another arrow. And these are not just arrows, they are astras. They're actually mystical weapons. They're in the form of arrows, but they're generally empowered by different mantras, invoking different deities or different potencies, different energies. So Lord Ram took another astra, placed it on his bow, pulled it back and released it. And Hanuman was chanting, Ram, Ram, Ram. And the Nishadaraj was crying, no, no, please. And the arrow was flying. And suddenly, it disappeared. Wow, this is just unheard of. But Vasishtha, not a man to be sort of deterred easily, just said, take another one. And the same thing happened. Until there was only one astra left. It was the Brahmastra. The weapon of Lord Brahma, the weapon which was used to kill Ravana. So, Lord Ram took the Brahmastra, placed it on the bow, pulled it back, released it, and Hanuman was chanting, Ram, Ram, Ram. And the Nishadha Raj was just crying, my Lord, no, please. And the Astra was flying, and then it disappeared also. And then Vasishtha said, there is some higher plan at work here. Let us stop. So that was that. But particularly it's the point that comes to my mind is Hanuman with his chanting. Chanting. There's a parallel with Lord Chaitanya. Hanuman, the great devotee, and what's his service? At least one of his main services is just to chant. And you may know the story right at the end of the battle, when, you know, it's all over, and Lord Ram has been congratulating and thanking everyone. But Hanuman was not right there. And Lord Ram was giving gifts. But Hanuman was not there. Maybe it was when they got back to Ayodhya. But anyway, it was after the battle at some point. And Hanuman approached Lord Ram and said, well, here I am. And Lord Ram said, oh, I've given all the gifts. There's nothing else. I haven't got anything to give. And Hanuman said, well, you know, you do actually have something else. There is something else that you can give. And there is something else that you can give. You can give the smallest thing. Just give the smallest thing that you've got. And Lord Ram said, what do you mean, smallest thing? What smallest thing have I got? And Hanuman said, just give me your name. That's all. The smallest thing. It's nothing. It's your name. And Lord Ram said, all right, you can have my name. And well, already Hanuman was already chanting so much, but there was another nice incident between the two of them, in relation to the holy name. So, yes, so like this, we can see parallels. There are parallels there. Because, which is only to be expected, because they are the same person. But it's very nice to note how we see this harmony between Lord Ram and Lord Chaitanya. I was thinking of saying some things about Hanuman, but then I remembered that it's going to be Hanuman Jayanti. It's actually on Monday, according to them. They say it's on Monday. I don't think it really matters, actually. So maybe we will do something. We'll have a little program like this on the Sunday. Yeah, we'll have a little program on the Sunday. And we'll have some Hanuman Katha. Because there's all sorts of really nice things about Hanuman as the devotee. as the devotee. The humble, very, very humble devotee. This is also a very nice thing in Ram Leela. The humility of Hanuman. Extreme humility. Of others too. There's others also. But Hanuman, you know, he's in the position of servant and he's just constantly in this position of humility. And we see in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, much more so than we see in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And by that I mean much more openly displayed in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, the extreme humility of the devotees. The extreme humility. And, you know, I don't doubt that it's there in Krishna Leela. I don't doubt that it's there. But maybe just not so prominently displayed or so prominent, so much noted. But in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, they're just overflowing with humility. And that was there in Hanuman. Before I go into something else, I'll tell you one little Hanuman story, which is one of my favorites, that when they had returned to Ayodhya, and now, you know, they're dressing as usual, not like when they're out in the forest and just living under the trees, but now they're living in a palace again and with all sorts of facilities. So, you know, of clothing and decoration, etc. So one day, just very shortly after they got back, then Hanuman, who was staying in the palace, Hanuman, for the first time, saw Sita with kumkum, what do you call it? Sindur, yeah. With sindur in a parting of a red color. And he had never seen it before. Women with this red stuff in their parting. So Hanuman, seeing this, he walked up to Sita and said and asked, "What is that red stuff? Did you hit your head?" And Sita said, No. It's sindur. Married women always wear it because it brings auspiciousness to their husbands. My wearing it is good for Ram. It means the husband will live a long life and be very healthy and strong. It's very good for Ram. Or for the husband. And Hanuman said, "Really? It's good for Ram? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's really wonderful. That is wonderful." And he walked away, just in this mood of, wow, the sindur. And it's good for Ram. Wow, that's amazing. So then, just a moment or so after, Lord Ram came there. Mother Sita's still standing in the same place. And Lord Ram came. And so they are having some exchange for some minutes. when suddenly this big red figure just jumped out in front of them, completely red, covered in cinder from head to toe. And they're shocked. What is this? And they saw, it's Hanuman. And Lord Ram asked Hanuman, what happened to you? Oh, what have you got on you? And Hanuman said, it's sindur. You know, Sita puts it in her parting because it's good for you. It'll bring auspiciousness to you. And that's just if she puts a little bit in her parting. But I want all good for you. So I am just going to wear sindur all over for the rest of my life. Because it's good for you. As a service to you. And Ram said, Hanuman, it's okay. Just relax. You don't need to do that. You don't need to do that. But anyway, in India, you see, you get all these temples and little, even like roadside shrines, at least in North India, where Hanuman is either red or orange or somewhere between red and orange. There's really a lot of them. So, next time you're in India, if we ever make it, who knows, and you see one of these little shrines with a red or orangey red, Hanuman, you know what the background is. And as we do mention, ladies, just remember that, the sindur, it's good for your husband. He'll live a long life and be very healthy and happy and strong. Yes. Therefore, it's good. You know, the hair parted in the middle, that's married woman with husband at home. Hair parted in the middle and with sindur. But if you want, you know, if you're not really so worried about how long your husband lives, and you're thinking of collecting the life insurance, then I guess don't bother. See what happens. Okay. So anyway, that's Hanuman. He was ready to do it. For the rest of his life, even though it looks bizarre, he didn't care. If it's good for Ram, that's all that matters. That is the mood of the devotee ultimately. If it's good for my Lord, that's all that matters. Nothing else matters. So, what I want to do now is read some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, from the 10th chapter, The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. On Wednesday night, right here, hopefully we'll have lighting. So we'll have our program starting, what was it, 6? 6 to 6:30, didn't you say? This is the boss here. 6 to 6:30 is kirtan, and 6:30 to 7:30 is a class, am I right? That's what you said, Raghunath, yeah. So, yeah, right here, we'll be having a class, and we'll continue with the pastimes of Lord Ram. But seeing we do have a little time now, I thought we could read a few verses from this 10th chapter of the 10th canto about the actual invasion of Lanka when Lord Ram and his whole army attacked. And let's read some verses of that up to a certain point, and then we'll carry on Wednesday. So I'm going to read from verse 17, Canto 9, chapter 10. We'll start with verse 17. I'll just read the translations. After entering Lanka, the monkey soldiers led by chiefs like Sugriva, Nila, and Hanuman occupied all the sporting houses, granaries, treasuries, palace doorways, city gates, assembly houses, palace frontages, and even the resting houses of the pigeons. When the city's crossroads, platforms, flags, and golden water pots on its domes were all destroyed, the entire city of Lanka appeared like a river disturbed by a herd of elephants. When Ravana, the master of the Rakshasas, saw the disturbances created by the monkey soldiers, he called for Nikumba, Kumba, Dumraksha, Durmukha, Surantaka, Narantaka, and other Rakshasas, and also his son Indrajit. Thereafter he called for Prahasta, Atikaya, Vikampana, and finally Kumbhakarna. Then he induced all his followers to fight against the enemies. One thing it mentions Indrajit, one thing I can just mention about Indrajit. You remember, was it yesterday? It must have been yesterday, that we talked about Lakshman and his vow to never sleep for the 14 years. So he appealed to Nidra Devi, who is the demigoddess of sleep, and said, "This is what I want. Can you please free me from your influence for these 14 years?" And Nidra Devi said, "I can do that. But someone will have to take the sleep." So, he suggested, "Can you ask my wife, Urmila, if she'll do that?" And so Nidra Devi went to Urmila, and Urmila immediately agreed, and she slept for the 14 years we mentioned yesterday. But another interesting point, which I was just reminded of today, is that Lord Lakshman, he was fighting with Indrajit. And Indrajit had been given a benediction that you cannot be killed by anyone. Unless it is a gudakesh, someone who's free from sleep. You can't be killed by anyone else. Only someone who is free from sleep. And therefore, Lakshman was able to kill Indrajit. That's just by the way. Let's continue here. Lord Ramachandra, surrounded by Lakshman and monkey soldiers, like Sugriva, Hanuman, Gandamada, Nila, Angada, Jambavan, and Panasa, attacked the soldiers of the Rakshasas, who were fully equipped with various invincible weapons, like swords, lances, bows, prasas, rishtis, shakti arrows, Khadgas and Tomarans, Angada, and the other commanders of the soldiers of Ramachandra faced the elephants, infantry, horses, and chariots of the enemy, and hurled against them big trees, mountain peaks, clubs, and arrows. Thus, the soldiers of Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana's soldiers, who had lost all good fortune because Ravana had been condemned by the anger of Mother Sita. Let me just mention briefly there, you know, that's an interesting and important, very important point. And the same point is repeated just in a few verses. Maybe in 10 or so verses. Something like that. Actually, less than 10 verses. Just in a few verses. That's verse 20. Exactly the same point is made in verse 27. That these soldiers died and Ravana himself died, as described in verse 27, due to the anger or the curse of Mother Sita. And Srila Prabhupada makes the point, and the point is just made by different people, how the strength of a woman is not, you know, you don't need to go gymming. I mean, to go gymming in a certain context is fine to keep fit. But if you want to become, you know, that sort of thing. Ladies don't need to do like that. They're just very staunch and strict in their chastity and their morality. Then they develop a special type of strength, which is so powerful that even Ravana couldn't stand against it. He was destroyed as a result. So that's an interesting point. I'll read another couple of verses and then that will be that for, well, except for the questions. Thereafter, when Ravana, the king of the Rakshasas, observed that his soldiers had been lost, he was extremely angry. Thus he mounted his airplane, which was decorated with flowers, and proceeded toward Lord Ramachandra, who sat on the effulgent chariot brought by Martali, the chariot driver of Indra. Then Ravana struck Lord Ramachandra with sharp arrows. Lord Ramachandra said to Ravana, "You are the most abominable of the man-eaters." Now think about that. That's pretty abominable. To be a man-eater is abominable enough, or worse. But to be the most abominable of the man-eaters, sure. Indeed, you are like their stool. You resemble a dog. For as a dog steals eatables from the kitchen in the absence of the householder, in my absence you kidnap my wife, Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punishes sinful men, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful, and shameless. Today, therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you. After thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow to his bow, not just an arrow, it was the Brahmastra, aimed at Ravana and released the arrow. And what happened? Tune in on Wednesday night. Oh yes, really. Must do. Well, we'll continue on from that point. So we got some, oh yeah, Mataji's going to read the questions.
The first one is, does Hanuman have an identity in Goloka with Vrindavan as well?
Does Hanuman have an identity in Goloka Vrindavan as well? Well, he does, actually. You know, he as Hanuman, put it that way, as Hanuman, his position is in Ayodhya. And Ayodhya is not in Goloka. Ayodhya is the highest part of Vaikuntha. Before, then there's a little gap, and then there's Goloka, Krishna Loka, which is the highest area. But in Navadweep, which is part of Goloka, Hanuman is there. Hanuman is there as Murari Gupta, very close associate of Lord Chaitanya, very close associate. You know, some of them have relationships with the Lord as Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, and some not with one but with the other of the two. And that's the case with Hanuman. Murari Gupta is Hanuman in Goloka Vrindavan in Chaitanya Leela. And Murari Gupta was a doctor and a devotee. And he wrote, it's interesting, he wrote a book about Lord Chaitanya, I forget the name offhand, but it was adapted by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, and a lot of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in Navadweep, as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're coming from those writings of Murari Gupta. But he was a great doctor and a great preacher. Whenever people would come to him with illnesses, he'd treat their illness with some medication, but then he would treat their spiritual illness with preaching. And therefore Lord Chaitanya congratulated him. You are the perfect doctor. Do we have any doctors here? Anyway. Yeah, you are the perfect doctor, because you cure both the material disease, I mean just the physical disease, and the disease of contaminated spirituality. Yeah, so therefore you are the best doctor. Okay?
The next question is, what color is Lord Ram?
Next question is, what color is Lord Ram? The descriptions are that he's greenish, a greenish color, like a certain type of grass. Is it kusha? I forget the particular type of grass, I think, is mentioned. But it's a greenish color, whereas Lord Krishna's blackish blue.
And the next question must be one from one of the children in the audience. Was Krishna around in the dinosaur age?
I see. Well, that's a wonderful question. Krishna's always around. He's around now, too. But, you know, some say that the dinosaurs, they manifest or they develop towards the end of Kali Yuga. That the lizards and reptiles They start growing and developing, and they become the dinosaurs, some say. You know, I don't know if it's exactly... some say that. But, you know, they do find these skeletons, of course, and they look pretty genuine. But, you know, you read, like in the 8th canto, you read about some battles between the demigods and the demons. And they were riding all sorts of amazing creatures in the battle, not just horses. Some of them were riding lions. Some of them were riding giant rats and all sorts of other creatures. So, you know what humanity's like. If you can make it extinct, we'll have a good shot at it. Right? At least some of our some of our type. Oh boy, it's amazing. So, yes. So species. Anyway, you know, Krishna, what do you mean by was Krishna around? That's a little, don't quite get that part. But the Lord is always around. But if you mean incarnating, we understand from Shastra, the next incarnation of the Lord will be Lord Kalki at the end of Kali Yuga. And whether there'll be dinosaurs around or not, I don't know, but... he's coming at the end of Kali Yuga. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, is pure devotional service free from a devotee performing devotional service without any material and spiritual desires, or is it with just spiritual desires for the pleasure of the Lord?
Okay. Pure devotional service, is it free from material and spiritual desires, or does it mean that there's just spiritual desires to please the Lord? It means there's no material desires, but there are many desires to please the Lord. Because desire, Prabhupada makes the point on a few occasions, desire is one of the symptoms of life. That desire, you know, the propensity to desire whatever, to desire things, that is part of, it's like a natural symptom of the living condition. So therefore it's not really possible to have no desires, literally zero desires of any sort. The impersonalists, they try to do that, have no material desires, but no spiritual desires also. But because desire, like we said, Prabhupada said, it's a natural symptom of the living entity, because it's just built into who and what we are, it's extremely difficult to suppress and not possible to rid yourself of desire altogether. So therefore, we as devotees, what we must do and try and do and cultivate is cultivate spiritual desires. In this way, the tendency to desire, you know, worldly things, whatever, that will reduce. Yeah. And, you know, if we cultivate spiritual desires means desires for serving the Lord, pleasing the Lord in different ways, and we try to fulfill those desires, then we'll become very satisfied. And when you become very satisfied in Krishna consciousness, then you just don't care about material things. There's no question of fighting with material desires and trying to stop your material desires. But they just, there's just no material desire, because you have really wonderful and very satisfying spiritual desires.
Is it possible for someone to surrender to the Lord at one point, but then later fall down and leave the service of the Lord? Was it that such surrender was never of the right quality and depth?
Okay, is it possible that someone will be surrendered to the Lord, but then after some time they'll fall down? And does that mean that whatever the surrender apparently was, when they were apparently surrendered, was it not really surrender? You know, it could be like that, but, you know, when you say that someone was surrendered to the Lord, the implication is that they really were surrendered. Now, of course, if someone, I mean, we are all at least partially surrendered to the Lord. Just because we're here means we're at least partially surrendered, because we could have done something else this afternoon. And certainly others are doing other things, even other devotees. May not be at one of our other programs, they may just be out jolling somewhere. I'm not pointing any fingers, but it wouldn't surprise me too much if there was at least one devotee doing something like that. So the thing is, our position is that we are somewhat mixed. And when you're somewhat mixed, mixed means Krishna conscious and not Krishna conscious, there's some mixture like that, then the possibility of falling down is quite real. And you actually have to be careful, because it could just happen, just kind of sneak up on you, and suddenly you find, wow, you know, I just did something that I know I shouldn't have done. But when someone becomes really, really fully surrendered, like, well, when we talk about Hanuman, actually, we'll read some verses which he spoke, which are quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And, you know, he expresses his mood of surrender. So when a devotee becomes surrendered on that sort of level, the likelihood of falling down becomes extremely remote. Although you can never say that it's just like totally impossible, it absolutely could not happen. But the likelihood becomes so small that Krishna says, for example, in the Gita a couple of few times, when someone goes back to Godhead, means they have achieved that surrendered, fully surrendered state, when they go back, then they don't fall down again to this world. And there's a conversation I found it, I know, like 20 years ago, and I've tried to find it on a number of occasions since, in which a devotee asks Prabhupada, isn't it possible, though, to fall down again? Even though Krishna says, once you go back, you don't return to this world again. And Prabhupada says, so far, no one has returned. So, we don't want to be the first one. But the thing is that the likelihood becomes so extremely remote that Krishna just doesn't even consider it. He just says, no, they don't come back again.
That's the last question. Yes. Please can you tell us about when Hanuman was going to eat the sun?
Yes, can we tell you about when Hanuman was going to eat the sun? Well, he ate the sun, actually. I mean, pretty much. Yes, we can tell you about that. Come back on Sunday next week, and we'll definitely tell you about that. Okay, we'll tell you some Hanuman, some nice Hanuman stories, some really nice ones, about what a devotee he is and what a special personality he is. Okay, so thank you all very much.